From San Francisco, I'm Moira Gunn, and this is Tech Nation. It's one thing to read about every technical advance that comes down the pike, but if you're really going to incorporate it in your planning strategies, John Patrick tells us we've got to get net attitude. He's the chairman of the Global Internet Project and the vice president of Internet Technology at IBM. He'll tell us what your kids know, but you don't. Later, I'll speak with Peter Stark about how technology can fool us about the limits of human endurance. And on Global Check-In, Mike Malone, the editor-at-large of Forbes ASAP, will tell us what Internet 2 will mean to broadcast television and radio.
Tech Nation is underwritten in part by the Tech Museum of Innovation in Silicon Valley. The tech is dedicated to the innovator in each of us. On the web at www.thetech.org.
In just 1 year, Napster became a massive learning experience for almost every high school and college kid in America. I asked John Patrick, author of Net Attitude, beyond free music and the jarring reality of federal lawsuits, what did a whole generation of our nation's youth learn?
Napster, it was, in a sense, a wake-up call for all forms of publishing. Because when you really think about it, it's not so much about music. And it's definitely not really about stealing music, which is sort of the headlines that we often hear about. But it's really about business models for published content. You know, people are willing to buy content. They're willing to pay for music. They're willing to pay for books. They're willing to pay for movies. The question, I think, that publishers really have to think about is, in what form do people want to get this published content? So, for example, one of my favorite kinds of music is Mozart. I love Mozart. So I go to buy a CD, and it has the 41st Symphony, the Jupiter Symphony. And on that same CD is also the 38th Symphony. So why is it the 41st and the 38th on that CD? Maybe I'd prefer to have the 41st and the 35th. Or you can't have it that way. Well, why? Because somebody somewhere decided that those two belong together. It wasn't Mozart that decided that, but somebody did. Well, I want to decide. And that's really what's going on with the internet at large. It's transferring power to people, right? It's not anarchy or marching in the streets. It's just that people have the power now with the internet to empower themselves with knowledge and to click on a button and make a statement about what they want. And it's not about stealing. It's about that. It's about the business model. Why can't I buy one track of the 41st Symphony and another track of the violin concerto if I'm willing to pay for it?
Now, at the same time, we look at that, and we look within the Napster phenomenon. All those college and high school students had PCs in their rooms, and they were seeing the net mm-hmm. through the medium of the web. And you're saying, look, the net is moving beyond the PC platform.
Yeah. Well, it's very true. The PC as the center of innovation in the internet space, that era is over. It doesn't mean PCs are over. I mean, PCs are still growing. I personally cannot imagine being without my ThinkPad. There's no way. On the other hand, lots of new devices are coming on the scene. Palm Pilots, WinCE devices, and I think we're going to see a huge amount of innovation with Linux in new kinds of small devices. So these new devices really sort of change the game for the internet. Like it makes the internet everywhere. Today, the internet's where your PC is. So instinctively, if you think, well, I got to go check something on the internet, it's like, what do you mean go? Go where? Well, it means go to where my PC is because that's where the internet is. Well, that's changing now. The internet is where you are. And that might be a PC. It might be a phone. It might be a public kiosk in the jungle where people that either can't afford or don't want any kind of a device will have access to the internet.
I can see all these kids in college when they get to be grandparents saying, well, we had these personal computers.
Right. With a keyboard and a mouse.
With a keyboard and a mouse. Right. And, you know, the funny thing is that when I went to college, there were two phones for the whole floor down the hallway. And having right. just delivered an offspring to college, there was no wastebasket even. There was nothing but, you know, the bunk beds and, you know, everything was bare, right. you know, the big light at the top. However, they did have high-speed internet access.
Right.
They had a phone with multiple mailboxes. And I was like, wait a minute, you can't give us a wastebasket, but you can give us all this access to the world? What's this about?
Exactly. Yeah, the kids hold a lot of clues to the future of the internet. You know, it's the attitude that they've grown up around, principally because of games, you know, and being around electronics and being used to a GUI, right, a graphical user interface that they interact with. That's how they grew up. So the computer is a very natural thing to them. And I think business leaders and for that matter, leaders of all organizations should spend more time talking to teenagers. I even advise put a teenager on your board of governors or your board of advisors or whatever you call it, and ask them what they think of your new web applications, because they can spot something really dumb quite easily.
Now, there's a difference between the PC moving out of the centralization or distribution of the net and the web moving out. When you're talking about the web, you're talking about screens large enough to see. You're talking a visual medium. And when we're talking about the net moving out, we're talking about the flow of information. Your whole network can be giving you a telephone call because the plane is late or your laundry is ready or however you want to interact with somebody or you were ready for you to sign the papers. That can operate off a database so that we're moving beyond the person connected to a visual image on a screen to sort of a multiple human interface in multiple ways.
Yeah. In fact, it's really an excellent point. I think that today, probably most people think the internet and the web, the World Wide Web, are the same thing, right? You buy a PC, you plug it into the wall, you plug it into a phone jack, and you turn it on, and there's a web page. So, I mean, that's the internet, right? Now, it really isn't. The internet and the web are completely different. The internet is an underlying communications mechanism. It allows pieces of information to go from point A to point B. The web is just a special purpose application that allows us to look at a web page, click, and go to another web page. Pretty soon, we'll start to think of other ways in which to use the internet that have nothing to do with the web. For example, my father is 85 years old. He has a pacemaker. Every 90 days, mom and dad get together and they hook up this acoustic coupler and it transmits data from dad's pacemaker to a doctor and he sends out a report. Well, why every 90 days? Why not, if something should go wrong with that pacemaker, why don't I get an email to my phone saying dad's pacemaker is having a problem, right? I mean, that can be done. In fact, we're working on that. That has nothing to do with the web, but it has a lot to do with the ubiquity of the internet and the fact that people's homes will be always on, connected to the internet. So if you're taking the train to work and you forgot to close the garage door, no problem. You grab your phone, you connect to your always-on connected home, you select the down button, you push the button on your phone, and down goes the garage door. Streaming weather data from a weather device on your roof of your apartment or your home coming to your phone. And then, of course, all the other informational kinds of things, being notified that the gate changed. At Dallas-Fort Worth, if the gate changes from 13 to 43, that could be 3 miles. You really want to know that.
We were going to Minnesota, now we're going to South Carolina. I mean, that's how big the place is.
Yeah, really. Huge.
And you want to know it fast. So I guess what I was getting when I was reading your book was this sense of you've got networks of information, you've got yourself out there, and you've got all different kinds of information that can flow, and you've got devices near you, like your pager, your cell phone, mm-hmm. the heart pacemaker inside, a PC, any number. You're in somebody else's office. So the information is going to be sent to you, and you're going to communicate in device-appropriate ways depending upon those devices around you.
Mm-hmm.
And those devices can be a parent and external to you, or they can be not a parent.
Yeah, or you might wear them. Might be part of your clothing at some point. But it's really the availability of the information on your terms that's the big sea change. You know, the big shift is this power to the people idea, that people will decide. You might like a pager. I might like a mobile phone. The next person may prefer to walk to a kiosk. Another person wants a portable music device that's also has email capability. Another person might want an email device that could also play music. I mean, it's everybody's different. And that's what I think institutions really need to pay attention to. And that's part of this net attitude idea in the book is think about the people, right? They have the power. The institutions don't have it anymore. That doesn't mean they're not going to be successful or profitable if they're a business. It just means they've got to pay attention to the habits and the differences and the preferences of people. Some people want to be anonymous with all these devices. Some people do not want instant messaging to reveal that they're connected. They want to go outbound only. Right? Other people don't mind the whole world seeing them online. But both of those are okay.
You're listening to Tech Nation. I'm Moira Gunn. My guest today is John Patrick, the Vice President of Internet Technology at IBM Corporation. His book is Net Attitude, What It Is, How to Get It, and Why Your Company Can't Survive Without It. Well, now we turn to the corporate side. And, of course, you know, we went from do you have a homepage, do you have a website, to it's pretty apparent now if you're a corporation. And boy, it's been a struggle getting everybody across the line for all their website and what is it going to do and all of this to say, wait a minute, I've got to design and be present for an information interface system to all my customers and clients and vendors that is appropriate to them with choice, and I've got to be able to respond within my corporation. How many people are actually doing that? How many companies are?
Well, it's no small task to do what you say. And as you put it, every business has a web page. I mean, that's not having a web page would be like not having a fax machine, would have been, you know, a few years ago. But the bigger challenge is how to meet the expectations of people, which involves a lot more than a web page. And principally, it involves integration of all the business processes that an organization has and making all of them available to people so that they can see, get an end-to-end perspective. This is the holy grail of e-business, is this notion of integration. For example, you can go to a hotel site and reserve a room online. That's really a nice thing to be able to do. You can go to all the airline sites and check your frequent points balance, your frequent flyer balance. Now, how about going to a hotel site, reserve a room, and pay for it online by deducting points from one of your airline frequent flyer? There's no way. You can't do that. Well, why? I mean, I'd like to be able to do that. That's an end-to-end view. So we're really at the very beginning. You know, in the big picture of the Internet, we're maybe 3 to 5% into the number of people using it, the number of things that you and I would really like to do that we can do, you know, maybe 5%. We're at the very beginning, and companies are moving rapidly. I mean, I think we're over that hurdle. I mean, we don't hear people talking about this like CB radio anymore, right? They know it's real, but there's just a lot to do, and you know that's frankly that's a big opportunity for technology companies like us to, you know, to help them do that. But you know, a lot to do.
Well, I always like to ask people about that which they know about. So let's talk about IBM. I mean, for years it was the largest commercial website in the world. I don't know if it is actually today because I hate to keep track of races and numbers and things, but it's certainly among the largest, if not. What the heck are you guys doing out there with www.ibm.com?
Right. Well, we dropped the www for openers, so it makes it a little more natural and easier for people to remember.
But you can still get there if you type
it. Oh, definitely. Oh, it works. But more and more people hopefully just think of IBM.com almost like a brand. And IBM.com/shop, and they can buy things. And, of course, we have a very large amount of commerce, both business-to-consumer and business-to-business, in particular with our suppliers, which was our first target of opportunity for actually using the Internet was to automate the flow of information, purchase orders, invoices. That's all being done online now. We've literally eliminated 5 million invoices per year in the purchasing realm of IBM. You know, we have a lot of suppliers, and we spend a lot of money on with vendors. So that was a huge opportunity for us. And then as a supplier ourselves, of course, we're working with thousands of companies all over the world, helping them to become an e-business, helping them figure out the right strategy, first of all. That's the most important part. It's like, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish with your e-business? And then helping them, you know, put it together and make it real and make it scalable and make it reliable and allow it ultimately to never go down. And this is one of our long-term goals, is something we call autonomic computing. It's very, very exciting. It's like the human body when you think about it. There's a lot of things our body just does. We don't think about it. It just, like if you're late for a flight, you start running and your heart speeds up. You don't tell it to. It just does. Where if you get really hot, you sweat, and those little beads of sweat evaporate and cool you down. And you get cold, you shiver, and the goosebumps vibrate and warm you up. And all these things that just sort of happen. Well, that's our vision of the way computing should be. So that a server, for example, may detect on its own that a power supply is going to fail. Not that it failed, but it's going to fail. So it sends a message to the IBM customer engineer and says, you know, please come visit and bring the following part number with you because it's going to fail sometime in the near future. So autonomic computing, just self-managing, self-healing.
Well, if anyone is all over the world, it's certainly IBM. Where are you with multiple languages?
Oh, well, language is part of this idea of natural that I talk about in the book. You know, there's seven characteristics to the next generation of the internet: fast, always on, natural, everywhere, intelligent, easy, and trusted. So what's natural all about? Well, that language is a part of that. Why should people have to go to customer service and speak the language of the customer service person? Why can't they speak their own language? And the reality is they can. And we actually have this technology working where instant messaging, for example, a person can specify their preferred language. So I send a message to you in English, but your preferred language may be German. So you will get the message in German. You reply in German. I get it in English. So that's one element of being more natural. And, of course, looking a little further down the road, we can see this being very highly conversational, where you're not typing an instant message. You're literally speaking in one language, the other person hearing it in a different language. We have web page translation available now, I think in, I'm not sure, 8 or 9 different languages. So that, again, you specify your preferred language, and you go to IBM.com and select a page, and it's translated on the fly into your preferred language. And in fact, not only visiting IBM.com, but visiting any website, and our technology will translate that page into your preferred language.
So 8 or 9 languages, you're still beginning too.
Oh, yes. At one point, there were 5,000 dialects in the world. And so when you think about it that way, there's a long way to go. But the top 8 or 9 or 10 languages hits a very high percentage of the population.
My guest today is John Patrick, chairman of the Global Internet Project. His book is Net Attitude. I'm Moira Gunn. You're listening to Tech Nation. You warn people to have their websites prepared for spikes in demand, and IBM has certainly experienced that from time to time. An early Olympics, I remember, as well as when Gasparov played Big Blue in chess. You just blew out the doors on that. Everybody wanted to see what was happening. But how does one predict that there'll be a spike in demand? I mean, if you're preparing for something that isn't going to happen, who has spikes in demand?
Well, it's an excellent question. I mean, the answer is it's very hard to predict, and that's why the technology for scalability is so important. And I must say, we've learned a great deal about this through experimenting with sports sites over the years, dating back to 1993. You mentioned the chess game and the Olympics. We've actually done, maybe 100 sporting events. And they really are, it's very unpredictable. You just don't know how many people are going to come. You don't know when they're going to come. And you don't know what they're going to do when they get there. You know, are they going to interact with the chessboard, or are they going to just read the news, or are they going to want to chat, or are they going? What are they going to do? You don't know. It's not like business transaction systems that are a little bit more predictable. An e-business site is highly unpredictable. So therefore, you have to have technology that can cope. That's part of this autonomic idea, this self-managing idea, is to be able to have a cluster of systems all tied together, which we actually did for the Olympics for Nagano last year, and again for Sydney, not last year, whenever that was, 2000.
Time
Nagano,
flies.
Right, time flies. And then when a spike of demand came, we could automatically shift that incoming set of requests to an additional server. So we've learned a lot about this, which, of course, we share with our customers. And we've actually patented some technology. We've built it into our products. And this is really a hallmark of IBM, is this notion of getting systems that you can't outgrow. And it's going to be increasingly important as the web becomes more and more like dial tone. And when people get cable modems and DSL, then they're always on. And when they're always on, their expectations go up. Their propensities go way up. And they expect, you know, around the clock, excellent responsiveness to be able to do whatever it is they want to do. So this idea of building these e-servers, we call them, that you can't outgrow and that scale and are manageable is hugely important.
I do want to thank you for pointing out that when a person clicks on more information, that it doesn't mean, here's the instructions as to how to buy the product.
Right, or who to call, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Yeah. I wanted more information, and I wanted it now.
Right.
And that's why I clicked the button. Right. It's a very fine point, but I did want to, didn't want to let you out of here without thanking you for that specifically. Well, John, thanks so much for joining me. Please come back and see us.
Been a pleasure.
My guest today is John Patrick. His book is Net Attitude: What It Is, How to Get It, and Why Your Company Can't Survive Without It. It's published by Perseus. You're listening to Tech Nation.